episode number 8 of Tech Talk today on WCCR 94.5 LPFM, live from the beautiful campus of University of the Cumberlands in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Triple T provides you with the latest news in the tech world and our opinions of what it all means. I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Let's get Triple T started with this week's Tech Roundup. Well, Toyota can help you yell at your kids.
That sounds fun.
An anonymous reader on Slashdot writes, if you tried yelling at kids without the help of technology, Toyota has a van for you. From the article, the latest version of the company's minivan, has a feature called Driver Easy Speak. It uses a built-in microphone to amplify a parent's voice through speakers in the back seats. Toyota says it added Easy Speak, so parents, quote, don't have to shout to passengers in the back. But chances are parents will probably already yell into the microphone anyway. But unfortunately, the feature only works one way, so kids can't talk back, at least not with amplified voices. The feature is an option on the 2015 Sienna, which is being refreshed with a totally new interior. Optional pull-down conversation mirror that lets drivers check on kids without turning around. Would this be handy for you, Justin?
My wife has been talking about a van, and I'm sure this would be a good feature to be able to be a little louder in the back than you normally are would be good.
Now, the conversation mirror, I've actually been in a van once where I actually had to use that. I took some church kids once somewhere, and I was like, hey, hands yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I rode in a town and country a couple of weeks ago that actually had a conversation mirror in it. It was like a convex mirror,
yeah,
where you could see everything in the back, but it seemed to me to be easier just to use the rearview mirror, but I know that's not what you're supposed to use it for, but
right.
It seemed easier to me. In a Network World article, Lenovo has stopped sales of its existing small-screen Windows tablets in the U.S., but plans a new model for release by the end of the year. They quoted here, quote, we will continue to bring new Windows devices to market across different screen sizes, including a new 8-inch tablet and 10-inch tablet coming this holiday. Lenovo, meanwhile, has stopped U.S. sales of its existing small-screen Windows tablets, including the ThinkPad 8 and the Mix 2 tablets with 8-inch screens, which was first reported by IDG News Service. Lenovo cites stronger demand for larger screen models. The company now says, however, that it intends to remain in the small-screen Windows tablet business in the U.S. with the launch of a new 8-inch model during the holiday season. So, I mean, I guess, Kurt, we're looking to see whether or not larger tablets or, you know, I guess they're trying to run the numbers to figure out if customers are going to want larger tablets or smaller tablets. I don't know. What's your preference? I mean, I like the size of my iPad, but I really do like the size of the iPad mini as well. But I don't want to hold a tablet to my face as a phone.
Phablet.
Exactly.
I love that.
I don't want one of those.
Well, I'll be honest. I'm definitely not the right person to talk to because I think the mini iPad is just not for me. I think it's a fantastic device, of course, but that size, I mean, I used a Kindle for a while, I really liked it. It was that same kind of smaller size. Of course, the screen was even smaller. A bunch of it was taken up with the keyboard, but I don't know. Apparently, I'm not the target audience there for the target market.
Right.
I mean, that's great, though. I've heard a lot of people say, oh, I want an iPad mini. And, what about a full iPad? No, I just want an iPad mini. Why? Because it's smaller. Can you give me any more? No. So, you know.
These tablets are like tools in your toolbox.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you know, the size of the tablet, the type of tablet, you know, it's the difference between the flathead screwdriver and the Phillips screwdriver and the pliers. I mean, it's different structure, different folks depending upon what they need. So, I think it's interesting to see that you can get different sizes of tablets. I mean, it makes it, you know, makes it more available to more people.
Now, that's an interesting thing you should say that. I didn't think about this, but what was the first thing that Steve Jobs did when he first came back to Apple? He slashed.
Bought a new suit.
Probably did. What's the second thing he did? He slashed all kinds of products.
Right.
The product line at Apple had grown so large and so unwieldy that it was difficult to support all of them. And I think that probably is going to happen in the near future again. It'll be a while, But
that sounds like something we're going to hear about Microsoft here in a few minutes.
That'll probably happen there too. Very good point. So, I think that's the kind of thing that's going to happen. Is they're going to have all kinds of tablets for this, this size, maybe with these features, and it's probably going to get too big, and then they'll start slashing and cutting product lines. So, but well, again, with my absolute favorite category, China. Remember last time we talked about how, what was it, Windows 8 was a security risk, and then we have Office is now a security risk. Well, it turns out most people in the slight majority of people are using mobile devices anyway in China. An anonymous reader points out that even though China's internet adoption rate is the lowest it's been in 8 years, the number of people surfing the net from a mobile device has never been higher. Let's see here, skipping a little bit. The number of people on a mobile device has overtaken those on a personal computer. This has been the first time, said the official China Internet Network Information Center, or CNNIC, on Monday. China's total number of internet users crept up 2.3% to 632 million by the end of June from 618 million at the end of 2013, says CNNIC's Internet Development Statistics report. Of those, 527 million, or 83%, went online via mobile. Wow, that's actually a considerable amount. Those doing so with a PC make up 81% of the total. China is the largest smartphone market in the world, and by 2018 is likely to account for nearly one-third of the expected 1.8 billion smartphones shipped that year, according to data from IDC. Very interesting.
Well, I mean, we're starting to see this not only happen in China, but we're starting to see this go worldwide. So, what you're looking at is, like, for instance, I had a friend that just got back from a trip to Africa, and he was in Zimbabwe and in Zambia, and also went through Kenya as well. And the number of smartphones in those areas was just unbelievable. People had not so much smartphones, but feature phones that they were using to get online, to do texts, and to do all kinds of different stuff like that. And so this number is just going to continue to get higher. These third world countries, and China is obviously not a third world country, but third world countries are going to start to use feature devices more and more. They're going to increase the number of feature phones and smartphones that they purchase. And, I mean, even in the United States, more and more people are going to move to having an iPhone and tethering off their iPhone at home for internet and using that mostly for internet. I mean, I have some friends that all they have at home is iPhones, and that's what they use for internet. They don't have internet at home at all. And that's going to become pretty common.
Which probably explains why we are moving towards larger and larger phones.
That's probably true. I mean, that's why the size of the tablet matters, because people are getting a SIM card in their tablet. What I mean by that for our listeners is, you get a card in your tablet that you can access the internet from your tablet, like an iPad or, some sort of Android tablet, and you access the internet that way. Just like you would for your phone. And you don't need an internet connection at home as long as you have good cell service.
Yeah, my Lenovo laptop had a slot for a SIM card too, and I saw that. I thought for the longest time, I don't have a media card that fits in here.
Most laptops at this point that are below 15 inches, actually 15 inches and below, most of them have a SIM slot.
Really?
Yeah, most of them have a SIM slot. Network World article, back to Bitcoin again. If you want to buy a laptop with Bitcoins, well, Dell is now accepting the digital currency as a form of payment. Consumer and business shoppers can pay for products directly via Bitcoins or through Coinbase, a third-party payment processing company. The buyers can pay for products through Bitcoin wallets or by scanning a QR code with a smartphone. The volatile Bitcoin has had a share of controversies and exchange shutdowns as the currency matures. Companies like Overstock.com, Newegg, Expedia, and some Amazon storefronts accept Bitcoin as a form of payment, but major retailers like Walmart and eBay have not warmed up to the idea yet. The value of Bitcoin on Friday was around $630 per Bitcoin, and I'll have to look that up here in a second, but there are some advantages to paying with Bitcoin. The form of currency is accepted around the world, and for Dell, the payment processing cost is less than for credit cards. But it also has its quirks. According to Dell, due to the nature of Bitcoin network, once you initiate a Bitcoin transaction, you cannot change or cancel it. So, you know, it's good for them because credit card processing costs money. Every time that you process a credit card, the seller has to pay a certain amount of money for that process. And it's cheaper with Bitcoin.
That makes sense.
You know, but it is still a volatile form of currency.
Oh, yeah, for sure. In educational technology and educational news, there is a school district. I'm sure people have heard about this one. Coachella Valley Unified School District gave out iPads to every single student and teacher. This is roughly 20,000 iPads. The good news is that kids love them, and only six or so got stolen or went missing. The bad news is these iPads are sucking so much bandwidth that it's keeping neighboring school districts from getting online. Here's why the CVUSD is considering becoming its own ISP. Let's see here. Skipping a little bit. It's a pretty long article. The school district passed Measure X, also known as the Mobile Learning Initiative, as a tax plan to raise $20.5 million to give every student teacher an Apple iPad for use in school and at home. Many district residents, this would be their first personal internet-enabled device. The real problem was infrastructure. The CVUSD fulfilled its ambition of blanketing the county in Wi-Fi using school property's hotspots, meaning that many of the students' homes are covered in the warm, comforting embrace of connectivity. Let's see here. Just give me just a little bit. Now, this is great because parents can actually use these and keep track of their kids' education. So it's really good. But the problem is a matter of bandwidth. 20,000 iPads, all of which are being used more or less constantly during the school day, is actually sucking bandwidth dry from the neighboring Palm Springs Unified and Desert Sands Unified school districts after bringing their internet connection to a complete halt. This was especially problematic as Palm Springs Unified began experimenting with Google Chromebooks in some classrooms, which, of course, have to be connected pretty much all the time. In response, these two school districts got Riverside County, which handles matters when like dealing with ISPs on behalf of the schools, to set data caps on Coachella Valley District's bandwidth usage. Very interesting. And the full article actually has some... They had no idea that this would be a problem.
Somebody didn't do their homework.
Somebody didn't think about this at all. I mean,
the very first thing you got to think about when you have any device is, number one, how is the user going to use the device? And when it's internet connected, number two, how much bandwidth is that device going to take up? And how many of them are you going to have? You know, they mentioned here, you mentioned in the article, it said the real problem is infrastructural. I agree with that 100%. They fulfilled their ambition by blanketing the county in Wi-Fi using school property as hotspots. Now, I don't know anything about this county, but, I mean, you know, the schools probably are pretty far apart, which means that they're using some sort of really high-gain Wi-Fi. You have to make sure that, number one, your high-gain Wi-Fi has enough, make sure that it can handle the amount of iPads that are going to access it. But, you know, I mean, if you connect 20,000 iPads back to a, you know, couple hundred, 200-300 gigabit
points.
Per second, or 200-300 megabit per second line, then you're not going to be able to handle it. I mean, you're going to need multiple gig speeds in order to handle that type of traffic, especially when you have a iOS update or do Apple updates, Apple Store updates.
Oh, yeah.
This is... great idea, but it sounds to me like somebody didn't do their homework, and for $20.5 million, somebody should have done their homework.
I think this is one of those issues where somebody, a higher-up, got an iPad, thought this is the greatest thing ever, said, we need to put this in the hands of our kids, and just said, make it happen, and didn't, you know, like as you said, didn't do the homework. But
well, I mean, question number two, how many of these things have gotten gone already? I mean, 20,000 iPads?
Now, they said only six or seven have been lost or stolen.
That's pretty good.
But that's very good. And they said that a lot of them, I didn't see the numbers, that many of the students were punished for finding ways around their content blocking mm-hmm. and going to blocked websites. But other than that, I mean...
No, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how it turns out for them. It's a good idea. I mean, iPads and mobile devices are what's going to run the future. So, I mean, kids need to learn how to use them. There's no doubts on that. PC Mag article about automated cars. Self-driving cars have the potential to make your morning commute a whole lot more enjoyable, but in the wrong hands, they may be used as, quote, lethal weapons, end quote, according to the new released FBI report. The unclassified but restricted report obtained by The Guardian through public records request notes that driverless cars could potentially allow criminals to, quote, conduct tasks that require use of both hands, end quote, like shooting at pursuers while the vehicle drives itself away from a crime scene. Autonomy will make mobility more efficient, but will also open up greater possibilities for dual-use applications and ways for a car to become or to be more of a potential lethal weapon than it is today, the FBI warned. A number of major car makers have autonomous vehicles in the works, including Audi, Nissan, Mercedes, and Toyota. Not only can you have the Toyota drive itself, but you can also yell at the kids in the back at the same time while it's driving itself. Right, Kurt? Don't know if that's a feature in the 2015 Sienna or not. The FBI believes that autonomous cars could be approved by Congress for use by the in the U.S. within 5 to 7 years, the report notes. So, interesting here. The FBI always has to have this kind of take on it. What can a criminal do with an autonomous car? What can a criminal with an automatic machine gun do with an autonomous car? And it's a good question, I guess. Would it be easier to take out people if the car drives itself? I guess. But, I mean, don't these people usually have people who drive them around anyway? Hmm. So, I don't know. It's an interesting interesting quote by the FBI.
That's very interesting. I mean, that's something I would have never thought about. Obviously, I don't have the same set of priorities that they do. I'm thinking about what cat videos can I watch on YouTube, not what heist can I pull off.
I guess that's the FBI's job to think of those kind of things. Interesting, though, from their viewpoint, what they think about autonomous cars.
I'm going to take a step backwards real quick. Just for fun, I looked up the square miles of Whitley County, which is the county we're in.
Okay.
437.8 square miles.
Okay.
Coachella? 28.95 square miles. So, I mean, they didn't have near as much landmass as, say, we would have to cover, but still, you know, that's not like five access points. You know, that's still huge.
And it's probably, being there in California, I'm not sure exactly where they are, but it's probably fairly rural, which would mean that they would have schools based pretty close to each other. And so that might not be a big of a deal for them.
I thought that was
not as many mountains maybe in their area either, which
right.
would cause problems.
Yeah. Sorry to take that step backwards there.
No, that's fine.
Let's see here. I like this one. This actually impacts my dad pretty good. The Rickmote controller can hijack any Google Chromecast. Now, if anybody's listening and doesn't know what a Rickroll is, it's where you click on a link to a video and you're redirected to a different video that's not the one you're expecting. Typically, it's Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up. It's called a Rickroll. So that's the idea behind this is, let's see here. Dan Petro, a security analyst for the Bishop Fox IT consulting firm, built a proof of concept device that's able to hack into any Google Chromecast nearby to project Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up or any other video a prankster might choose. The Rickmote, which is built on top of the $35 Raspberry Pi single board computer, finds a local Chromecast device, boots it off the network, and then takes over the screen with multimedia of one's choosing. But it gets worse for the victims if the hacker leaves the range of the device. There's no way to regain control of the Chromecast. Unfortunately for Google, this is a rather serious issue with the Chromecast because it's not really an easy fix. You have to basically do a factory reset on it. And
So you can't just unplug it?
No, because it uses a Wi-Fi vulnerability is how it does that. I've read into this a little bit, and
it's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, it's basically just basic Wi-Fi vulnerability. Apparently, just it uses something called deauth, deauthorizes it, and I think it sounds a little like a middleman attack, kind of. It then redirects from that and gets its data from the Raspberry Pi, I think. What's bad is I just bought my dad one of these for Christmas, I believe.
Have you tried the prank?
No, well, I have to get Raspberry Pi first.
Oh, okay.
Ever buy this thing. But
it'd be best $35 you ever spent in your life.
That's good, but unfortunately, he would call me to help fix it. So
well, maybe not the best $35.
Unless I could get some money out of it.
You might could. Yeah, you could be the Chromecast fix-it guy.
Pizza or something, but that's pretty interesting. I mean, Chromecast is a very cool device. Don't know if anybody's ever used one. We should probably do that as app of the day. Let's say you probably don't watch a lot of sports. You could probably go with the Chromecast. Let's go over that later. But so, moving on, what do you think?
Sounds good. We'll talk about that as app of the day. Let you talk about that. PC Mag article, the longest serving board member in Apple's history is retiring after 17 years. Bill Campbell joined Apple's board in 1997 at the request of then neighbor Steve Jobs. Though his relationship with Apple dates back to 1983 when he joined the company as vice president of marketing, his departure from the board made way for Apple to appoint Susan Wagner, founding partner of money manager BlackRock, as a director. Quote by Apple CEO Tim Cook here, Sue is a pioneer in the financial industry, and we are excited to welcome her to Apple's board of directors. We believe her strong experience, especially in the M&A and building of global business across both developed and emerging markets, will be extremely valuable as Apple continues to grow around the world, end quote. Wagner, in 1988, co-founded BlackRock, which is now one of the top asset management companies. She graduated from Wellesley College, with a BA in English and economics, and went on to earn an MBA in finance from University of Chicago. Cook said the exiting board member Campbell's contribution to Apple are, quote, end quote, immeasurable. When Bill joined Apple's board, the company was on the brink of collapse, Cook said. He was not only helped Apple survive, but he led us to a level of success that was simply unimaginable back in 1997. So we say congratulations to Bill and his exit from Apple and wish him the best.
Well, that's nice.
And last but not least, another PC Mag article in an acquisition here. Twitter in-app commerce experience is expected to get even more inclusive thanks to this week's acquisition of payments infrastructure company CardSpring. There's no word on how Twitter will utilize a startup which enables digital publishers and retailers to create online to offline promotions. Quote here from CardSpring, they said, we see the intersection of payments and digital media as an opportunity to revolutionize how consumers use credit and debit cards. While helping retailers to connect and communicate with their offline shoppers, much in the same way the internet has enabled online stores to create relationships with their online customers. Little is going to change right now that CardSpring has joined the flock. Company will continue to develop its platform and work with partners to create new experiences for customers. So Twitter already works with American Express, Starbucks, and Amazon to provide users with special deals, gift options, and ability to add items through online shopping cart, all without leaving their own timeline there while they're inside of Twitter. So just another way that Twitter is going to make some money off of purchases inside the application. So
interested to see how that goes.
Yeah, good purchase for them, I think. Anytime that you can make money for someone else inside your app, you're going to make more money because you can drive up the prices of advertising.
That'll
win. Yeah, so it's good for them. And if they can show that, that'll be good. So now we're going to transition into app of the week. And Kurt's going to talk about our app of the week, Chromecast.
Well, I got my dad a Chromecast. I really had no idea what to get him. And he likes to put things on the computer, on the TV, and the TV didn't have a VGA, so I thought, well, this will work quite nicely. He ended up getting, since he does HDMI, but don't have a cable all the way across the room. So what is Chromecast? Chromecast is from Google. It's a thumb-sized media streaming device, and it plugs into your HDMI port on the TV. So you set it up with a simple mobile app that you can download. Either you can have it on your computer, and built into YouTube and Netflix, there's actually a method of sending it to there. Send your favorite online shows, movies, music, and more to your TV using your smartphone, tablet, or laptop. It's very interesting how it works, actually. Instead of, say, you go to Netflix on your computer, and then it sends it to your TV, what actually happens is you'll basically queue up Netflix and say, I want to watch this. Now start casting to the TV. So what happens is it sends the command or whatever to the Chromecast and says, start streaming this. And then it takes over. So you can just then shut your laptop off. It starts sending it. The Chromecast is what starts doing the streaming, the way I understand it anyway. You can see if you're, say, on a mobile device, typically in the bottom right, I think it is, of YouTube in the stream, you'll see this little icon looks like a screen and then like a couple wavy lines that you hit that. And if you have a Chromecast on the same network, you should be able to send it right there. Really easy to set up. I think when we turned it on, it had to do an update. That took about 15 or 20 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. It took a little bit of time. But after that, it worked pretty well.
So how does it connect to the TV? I've never used one of these, and I haven't really read much about it. I know about Chromecast, but I don't know about the hardware.
It is quite literally, I mean, the whole thing, about the whole size of your thumb, and it just plugs into your HDMI, and then at the back, this is the part they don't show you, it plugs into, gets it power. And there's a little extension cable, just in case it's not too, you know, it doesn't fit in there or whatever, but I don't remember the whole process because it was quite a while when I did this, but
so it's HDMI for the video stream, for video and audio stream,
mm-hmm.
and then USB for the power.
No, well,
or it's like a little power adapter, right?
Yeah, it's okay. Something like that. Gotcha. Honestly, it might be a micro mini USB.
Okay,
but you could either plug it
into power, or if your TV gives you the ability to run power through the USB, you could probably plug it in there too.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, which would actually be a really great idea. Let's see here. Chromecast works with a growing number of apps, including Netflix, HBO Go, YouTube, Watch ESPN, and Pandora. And actually, that's the thing I said about sports. Basically, most people I know that don't want to cut the cable, their cable line, is because of sports packages. Or I shouldn't say cable, satellite.
Right. Cord cutter. Yeah.
Bingo. And looks like with the having Watch ESPN, that's will get you at least some of those,
sports packages. I love Watch ESPN. Watch ESPN is the greatest thing ever. I love it.
Let's see. Now, if you want to find out more, you can go to Chromecast.com/apps to see what apps are there. As they say, for everything else, you can mirror what you see on the small screen to the big screen. If you're on your laptop, you can cast any website in Chrome, and from your Android phone or tablet, you can mirror your screen to the TV. Now, last I used this, Dad's using Windows 7 when he originally set this up, and you could cast. It was in beta. When you could cast from inside of Chrome, the browser.
So you could actually cast what was on the browser screen and onto the TV.
We didn't try it with video, though.
Right. So, I mean, essentially, this is a replacement. So if we have a listener that wants to put content from their computer, okay, if they typically watch a movie online through something like a Netflix or a Hulu, and they don't really have a good way to get that from their computer to their TV, and they don't have an Apple TV, they don't have an extra computer that they could plug into their TV, then this is a good solution for them.
Absolutely.
What's the price on this thing?
$35.
Okay, well, you can't beat that then.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I almost bought one. My wife would have been very upset with me because I already have a cable going from TV to the laptop. It's a very cool thing. Just they're $35. Even if you know you don't like it, you're not out that much for something that does this. The problem is apparently it can be hacked.
Well, yeah. If you have somebody that knows what they're doing.
Let's see here. Honestly, it's a really cool thing. Just going through the apps, apparently you can also play games on it, but explore and create, get stuff done. I mean, website, I'm on their Chromecast, well, googlechrome.com/Chromecast, and there's a lot of cool things. It's really explaining what it does, because somebody asked me once, I said, well, can I watch sports on it? Originally I said no, but I know about ESPN, Watch ESPN, but...
I love Watch ESPN. Did I say that already?
You did.
It's the greatest.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Apparently, if you have a Chromebook, it works even better with it. But, you know,
can we talk about Watch ESPN next week?
If you would like to talk about Watch ESPN, you can.
My wife is laughing right now because she knows how much I love Watch ESPN.
Well,
it's really cool. You can watch ESPN on Watch ESPN on your device. It's really neat.
As much as
Watch ESPN isn't paying me for this. I'm just saying how much I like it.
If I was going to talk about Halo, you know, he said you'd have to get another person. If you were talking about ESPN, you'll have to get another person for me. All right. Well, let's see. What's next? Anything else I could say about Chromecast?
So Chromecast, I mean, if you're listening to us right now and you're saying, you know, I want to hook up something to my TV where I can watch Hulu, Netflix, those kind of things, and I don't have an Apple TV, I don't have another device, I don't have a whole lot of money to spend on this, I don't have an extra laptop, then this may be something to look at for you. Chromecast, it's you can go out. What's the site again, Kurt?
I just went to
search for Chromecast.
Looked for Chromecast on
okay. Google. So search for Chromecast, and it is a Google product, and you can get one for $35 and try it out.
Yeah, they're at Walmart. To work on mine.
Sounds good. Well, so Chromecast, that is our app of the week, and now we're going to transition into our deep dive. All right, we're going to start off this week's deep dive talking about Chrome again. So a PC Mag article this week stated if you're running Windows 7 or earlier on a laptop and you use Google Chrome as your web browser, your battery is being unnecessarily drained. With Windows 8 and later, the problem is no longer exists thanks to a recent report in Forbes. Google itself is finally committed to fixing the issue, which is known about for 6 years.
Committed.
Yeah, so they're committed now.
Really committed.
The reason Chrome has been killing battery life and slowing down laptop performance is that it forces the Windows system clock tick rate to 1 millisecond, where the default is 15.625 milliseconds. Okay, let me explain. So you have a tick rate, and that's how fast your processor in your computer is running. And normally that tick rate is 15.625 milliseconds, but the Chrome forces that to 1 millisecond, which forces your processor to work harder, which then forces more battery usage, and so that's what ends up happening. So this is the frequency at which the processor responds to requests from programs, essentially. Internet Explorer, by contrast, only increases the tick rate if the browser is engaged in constant activity, such as streaming video. Chrome brings up the rate even if it's just showing a blank page. The bug has been elevated to priority 1 on the Chromium project site, indicating that its resolution is a requirement before the next version of browser can be released to the public. Hmm. Windows 8 users aren't affected again by the issue because newer operating system like Mac OS X and Linux dispenses the clock tick strategy. Dispenses with the clock tick strategy instead of allowing the CPU to run in lower power mode until it's called upon. So what it's saying there is in Windows 7, you can tell a program, okay, I want this program to have low priority, high priority, and that depends upon how much processor it gets. So essentially what's happening is Chrome is placing itself in a higher priority. It's causing the CPU to work harder, and therefore it's draining your battery. So, Kurt, you know, we sang Chrome's praises last week. Mm-hmm. It was our app of the week. We sang its praises. But, you know, this brings up a good question. What is a good browser to use?
Well, I'm not the best person to ask this because I don't use just one single browser for one single thing. Of course, that might be the best strategy, to be completely honest. I mean,
I have to agree with you.
There's a lot of where I work, there's a lot of company apps that only work with IE. Or, so obviously you have to use it there. There's a lot of other things that, you know, IE is just fine for, you know, surfing around just a little bit, not doing a lot of media. Honestly, through Chrome, you're probably going to get the best support, the best experience with media. They are usually right at the front edge of the curve on HTML5 and the newest types of standards. Firefox used to be the standards king, but now they're releasing updates so quickly, they're kind of falling by the wayside from what I've personally seen. And Safari makes things look pretty, but I'm not a big fan of Safari. If you just want to use something that goes really wicked fast and is very customizable, Opera might be the way to go. But it's now that they've gone with a Chromium rendering, I guess is the best way to put it. Basically, Opera is now built off of Chrome since past version 12. Now they're on version like 15, I think. So Opera is doing some odd things right now. But I mean, I couldn't pick just one browser. Each one is a little better for different things for me. So if I'm just going to do a quick search on something, usually I just open Chrome. So I don't know.
I'm still stuck on you saying wicked fast. I thought that was pretty cool.
Wicked fast.
Wicked fast. So, you know, you're right, Kurt. Browsers are like tools. Different tool for different things. You know, if I want to put a nail on the wall, I'm not going to use a screwdriver. In my opinion, anything that's Microsoft related, I try to use IE for it.
That
so if I'm
sense.
Trying to go to a SharePoint site, if I'm trying to go to, you know, check Exchange email, I'll use Internet Explorer. For most other stuff, I use Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Chrome browser. I think it is compatible with most stuff. I agree with your thoughts on Firefox. They're bringing out too many updates. They're causing problems. Each time they bring out an update, it seems like they break more and more sites where, you know, if you try to go to that site, you can't get to it. I mean, I guess my biggest recommendation for listeners is, you know, if you're trying to go to a website and the site seems sluggish, or the site, you can't get to it, you know, you might want to have a couple of different browsers installed. You might want to have, if you're a PC user, you might want to have Internet Explorer and Chrome installed, and, you know, kind of get a feel for which apps work best in which browser. If you have a problem with one, then switch to the other browser. If you are a Mac user, you may want to have you already have Safari installed. You may want to install Chrome and maybe even Firefox as well. But maybe you want to install Chrome as well and try that browser out and make sure that, you know, if you have a problem in one, then move to the other one. So I mean, you know, that's usually what I do. So, you know, the question is, Kurt, are there any browsers that you would recommend against having? I'm sorry?
Links. No, I'm just kidding. It's a text-only browser.
So, I mean, you know, there's a whole lot of them out there. Oh, I mean, I actually heard about one the other day that I'd never heard of. It was called Pale Moon. I mean, essentially, some people like to go out and download all kinds of different weird browsers. But, you know, the more unheard of the browser is, the more likely that you're going to have problems accessing certain sites. And you may not have problems accessing the site, but when you get dived down into the site and try to do certain things, then those may not render correctly.
Oh yeah. Let's see here. If I was going to rank, not really rank them, but just throw the top five out there that I personally would use. I mean, you've got Chrome, you've got IE, you've got Firefox. I don't really like Safari, but I mean, Safari's there. And I would Opera. And the other one that I would even consider putting in a list might be Tor. Have you used Tor?
I have not.
I've not used Tor myself, but basically for anonymity, it's probably the best thing out there. But if you're using Tor, people think you're doing something illegal. So basically, there's a lot of nodes out across the network. And basically, it's kind of like having proxies in place from the way I understand it, from the browser standpoint. So you go to navigate a website, and it goes through these nodes, apparently, and then dumps it into you. So I don't know. I'd have to read up on that to see you there. But
Well, you know, and security is a big thing with your browser as well. I mean, be extremely important. And when we talk about IE, we're talking about Internet Explorer on a Windows machine. Obviously, you can't get that anymore on a Mac. Years ago, you could have IE on a Mac, but that's been a long time ago. So, you know, be careful with the browser you use. If it starts acting strange, then, you know, try to switch to another browser, see if that helps you out. There are some programs that just aren't compatible with certain browsers. There are certain Microsoft sites that aren't compatible with Chrome or Firefox or Safari. There's certain Apple sites that aren't compatible with anything except Safari. I've ran into those before. There's some corporate type Apple sites that aren't compatible with anything except Safari. So, you know, the browser you use is pretty important. And if you haven't went out and downloaded an additional browser, you know, if you run into problems, try it out. It give you a chance to kind of see which app works best in which browser. And hopefully Google will make a change to this in Windows 7 and keep it from killing battery life. Next deep dive article that we're going to go over is another PC Mag article. As a part of the massive Microsoft layoffs announced today, and Kurt's going to have a lot of fun with this article. He enjoys this stuff. Redmond will also shutter Xbox Entertainment Studios. As first reported by Recode, the shutdown will occur in the next few months. Xbox chief Phil Spencer wrote a memo to the staff telling them that Xbox Entertainment Studios was founded last year in order to produce original content for the Xbox platform. The LA-based 125-person studio was led by former CBS television president Nancy Tellum, who remains, quote, committed to new original programming already in production, end quote, Spencer said today. That includes the Signal to Noise documentary series announced in December, the first installment of which will tackle the rise and fall of Atari and that recent Atari cartridge scavenger hunt in the New Mexico desert. We talked about that earlier. Kurt and I did off air. Also still on track is Halo Nightfall, a live-action series being produced by Ridley Scott, and the Halo TV series is being developed in coordination with Steven Spielberg and is set to debut next year. Both, in a quote here from Spencer, will continue as planned with 343 Industries. And Kurt, you can talk about more about them in just a minute. Interactive sports content like NFL on the Xbox will also continue, but otherwise, Xbox users shouldn't expect too much more original content out of Redmond. Look to our app partnerships with world-class content providers for that, said Spencer. So, Kurt, you know, you're the expert here in this area as far as, you know, original content, especially content on the Xbox. So, you know, what's your thoughts? Is this, you know, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, others are making big leads in original programming. Is this the right move for Xbox? Is this the right move for Microsoft?
I think axing this might be the right move for them. I mean, typically how Microsoft operates, and I think we've talked about this before, is they'll enter a market and start selling something at a loss. And, you know, basically give it away until people start using it, get used to it, and they start using it for whatever reason. You know, they may not even know there's another option. And then they come up with more iterations and start making a profit on it. In this case, I don't know if they have the ability to produce something like this on a loss. You can't even, like, really equate that this way. So I don't know if this really is a good move for them. That said, I mean, there is a lot of... I just went to their Wikipedia page, and you can see what things that they've worked on or were currently working on. And basically, you know, we just have to see, you know, what direction they were going, what direction they're going to go from here. And like you said, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu have had great leads in original programming. I think House of Cards is Netflix, and let's see, is it Orange is the New Black? That's another one that Netflix, at least. Hulu has one, Pramface. I think there's a mostly British-related Rev. Those are all apparently doing really well. They're entering multiple seasons, at least. I think most of those are on their third season by now.
Well, I mean, from your viewpoint, and I'm asking you this because you're more of a original content, you know, plus gamer person than I am. Is there a good mix between the gamer and the person who wants original content? Is there a commonality between those two groups? Are those a lot of times the same?
Oh, you could definitely say that. I mean, and the one really great thing about the Xbox is you first turn it on and you see, you know, their tile interface looks just like it does on Windows 8 or whatever. You see the tile interface, and you'll see advertisements interspersed with your actual content. And I know, you know, if I'm really thinking about the video game Halo, you know, I'll see that game right there, and I'll see an ad for it right there. And, you know, if you get a gamer that's really obsessed about some game or whatever, they're going to go for everything. They're going to see everything. They just want more and more content. That's one big thing that a lot of people will rank video games on, is how long is it? How much content is there? How do I get more content? And that's the way they're actually, the industry, gaming industry, is really ripping off a lot of gamers, is with downloadable content. But that's another whole issue I could talk about. But, you know, having original content, you know, especially coming from Microsoft for a Microsoft product such as, say, Halo, because that's basically what kept the Xbox alive. And if it wasn't for Halo, it would not be here today. You know, gamers are going to go for it. They're going to see it. And it's very easily accessible there. And if, you know, I see original programming off the Xbox somewhere related to something on it, that might lead me to buy an Xbox, for instance.
So my understanding, though, of the article and of the change is that this 343 Industries is going to continue to produce this stuff. I mean, I assume that Microsoft will work friendly with them and that, you know, the content will go across. So essentially, is this just Microsoft saying, okay, we're not going to be in charge of this production. We're not going to pay for this production stuff. We're going to let you guys over there at 343 Industries take care of that. And, you know, we'll be happy to put your advertisements on our Xbox, and we'll be happy to, you know, help you out with whatever you need help with. I mean, is that what we're doing here?
I think it is. And if I've seen, if what 343 has worked on so far is an indicator, they'll do a good job with it, or at least they'll certainly try. I'm just going to have to tie this in with Halo, because that's almost half of what the Xbox Entertainment Studios was working on, was Halo related projects. As Bungie originally developed Halo for the Mac years ago, and Microsoft ended up buying it and said, "You only make this on our product for at least, I think it was four title games." And after they finished, Bungie wanted out. They were purchased by Microsoft after that, and then after Bungie wanted out. And so 343 is a subsidiary of Microsoft Studios and has taken over the Halo franchise. And that really makes sense for them to take over the titles that were being worked on through Xbox Entertainment Studios. And so far, they've done an excellent job on, say, Halo 4 and the extra maps on Halo Reach. They've just been supporting, basically, the games that Bungie said, here, take this, we're done. You know, they're working on bigger, broader things, or they think bigger if it's not going to happen. But so that's basically what's happening. I think this is a really great thing, to be completely honest. Microsoft can, you know, shed that and focus on something else, you know.
And we talked last week in our deep dive about Nadella, their new CEO, and I mean, obviously, this is an after effect of him coming on board and saying, okay, let's wipe this out. So, you know, and we talked about last week how he's trying to streamline. He's all about the cloud.
Makes sense.
And you know, this really has nothing to do with the cloud.
No. And they haven't made big forays into this area yet. So, I mean, I could see where he's come from if I was, you know. If I was running a business and I see something that's new, I mean, I could probably axe it without, you know, thinking too much about it because they hadn't made great forays into that, you know, that industry.
Well, this has made me think a lot about Halo. I'm gonna have to come up to your house and play some Halo.
Yep.
Because I haven't played Halo in a very, very, very long time. My wife is laughing right now because she knows how bad I'll be at it. But we'll have to do that.
I've got almost every single one.
Well, we'll have to try that out then. Our last deep dive article for today is one that you've probably already heard about, and it's about really bad customer service. BDR article talks about, and a whole lot of other articles out there, Comcast may be one of the two most hated companies in America, and it may have terrible customer service according to most accounts, but it turns out that when it comes to customer service in the United States, Comcast is only the sixth worst company when it comes to providing support to subscribers. The news could be a tiny boost for Comcast. Earlier this week, the company had a customer care-related incident that went viral when one of its employees was recorded while he relentlessly tried to prevent a customer who ended up being a well-known tech blogger from canceling his service. Online website Ranker has companies with the worst customer service survey on its website, which got more than 14,000 votes from over 2,800 voters. Surprisingly, Comcast is only the sixth worst company on the list, following the other well-known companies, American Airlines at number 5, Walmart, Bank of America, AT&T, and finally, number 1, winner, chicken dinner, Time Warner Cable. Good for them. I'm just so happy for you guys. So what we did was we pulled a clip of this customer service call from Comcast that you just got to hear if you haven't heard it yet. And Kurt's going to fire that up. Let's listen to this clip.
All right.
Okay, we'd like to disconnect, please.
Okay, so why is it that you don't want the faster speed? Help me understand why you don't want faster internet.
Help me understand why you can't just disconnect us.
Because my job is to have a conversation with you about keeping your service, about finding out why it is that you're looking to cancel the service.
I don't understand.
If you don't want to talk to me, you can definitely go into the Comcast store and disconnect your service there. Okay.
We're just asking for you to
kill two birds with one stone. You got to return that cable card to the store anyways.
We're actually going to just mail the cable card in, but if you can just please cancel our service, that would be great. That is all we want.
We're actually not able to return a cable card by mail.
Then I will send someone like a TaskRabbit to go return the cable card for us. I don't personally intend to return the cable card. That's why we're probably not going to be canceling in store. So that's why I need you to cancel by phone. So can you cancel us by phone? The answer is yes, correct?
I mean, it sounds like you don't want to go over this information with me. I mean, if you're not wanting to go over that information, okay, then that's the easiest way to get your account disconnected.
I am declining to state why we are leaving Comcast because I don't owe you an explanation. So if you can...
So, okay, that's just a little clip of this guy talking to the rep from Comcast. He asks multiple times, hey, I want to disconnect from Comcast service. And the guy says, well, I really want to know why you're disconnecting from Comcast service. This goes on. This guy had already been on the phone for 10 minutes. This clip goes on for another seven or eight minutes.
Yep.
And it's essentially just a repeat over and over again. And the guy was the guy who called into Comcast was extremely nice. I mean, he kept the same tone of voice.
Calm.
I would like to disconnect my service. I would like to disconnect my service. Now, he's a lot nicer guy than me. I would have been like, dude, you know, give me your supervisor. And then I would have told the supervisor, hey, this guy needs to go home and have somebody else pay for his lunch. But, you know, getting bad customer service is one of the most upsetting things. You know, why is customer service so important, Kurt?
Well, when you buy a product, you're not just buying the product. You're buying the word of the company behind it. It just sounds really metaphorical and really stupid. But, I mean, you're putting your faith and their faith in their product in your hands. And if something doesn't work, it is up to them to fix it, to make it right, to make it work. And if for ongoing things such as for ongoing things like this, you know, you have to make sure that if you're delivering something, it has to work. And even if something is simple, even if they're leaving you, as in this case, you know, they're going to have to let it go.
Well, and supposedly the story behind this is that, you know, that Comcast teaches their employees to make sure they find out why the customer wants to leave. And I agree that, you know, you need to survey the customer and figure out why they're leaving, and that way you can figure out what you can do better. But you shouldn't annoy the living daylights out of the customer. I mean, they don't have to tell you that, Kurt. I mean, you know, they don't have to. When you ask them the question, hey, you know, why are you leaving? And they say, well, I'd rather not mention that. You know, maybe one more time. You know, is there anything we could do better for you? No, I just want to leave. Okay, well, let me help you with that. That's customer service.
Right. There was an analyst, I should have sent this to you, I didn't think about it. There was an analyst, a Comcast data analyst, it's what he said on Reddit. Obviously, there's some anonymity on Reddit, so you don't know if it's true, who basically talked about what he was doing and why this happened. And he basically said that he was being way too pushy, and he would have gotten in trouble for that. But basically, he didn't give the exact numbers, but let's say he's in the retention department. If you only get, say, 85% of your business to stay on, you get your full paycheck. And if if that number falls below, you start losing some of that paycheck. And reading the too long, didn't read TLDR, Comcast provides heavy incentives for this kind of behavior. And it's been on a steady trend heavily towards this for years. And it says that they're basically, their customer service is going down the drain. The entire corporate culture is toxic, and there is a pervasive us against them attitude. Also, the profit margin is insanely big. You shouldn't do business with Comcast. This is coming from a former analyst from Comcast. But he says basically, you know, he's pushing way too hard, but this is being encouraged by Comcast to push this hard.
I mean, what does this tell you? Three of the top six worst customer service companies are ISPs, media providers. I mean, you got Time Warner Cable, AT&T, Comcast. That's horrible.
Have you read about internet service providers in other countries in Europe? Mm-mm. Apparently, America is getting completely gypped because of capitalism, and they're buying into the government, basically. Apparently, others are paying considerably less than we are for faster speeds.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's why these mergers need to be closely watched, because you don't want to create a monopoly.
They need to completely stop. They've already got an oligopoly.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I get disturbed when there's bad customer service, you know. And, I mean, there's people who do it right. I mean, like Zappos, for instance. I mean, Zappos, they sell, you know, shoes and clothing. You know, they do it right. I was reading an article the other day talking about several different companies that, you know, that do customer service right. There was an article about Zappos, and there was a lady who was buying shoes for her mom or something and had to send them back, and they did something really nice and sent them. It was something about her mom was in the hospital. They sent her flowers and everything else. I mean, you got some people who, on one hand, are just excellent at customer service, but you got these other companies, Comcast, AT&T, Time Warner, American Airlines, Walmart, who
they have you.
And
they know they have you.
Right. And I mean, okay, you don't want our product, then okay, then go on. You know, just get out of here. You know, and I kind of find it interesting that this guy, he was trying to do his idea of his job, but someone dropped the ball here. You know, with these type of calls are monitored. In these customer service centers, there are people who have the ability to put on a headset and listen to these calls as they're going on. Mm-hmm. Somebody above him dropped the ball. I mean, in my opinion, I think that's what's going on here. I think somebody above this guy dropped the ball. I think at some point when they saw this call going on for this long, they should be checking through these calls as they go on. And when they skipped over this call, when they clicked onto this call and heard this call going on, they should have stopped this call. Hmm. They should have gotten into this call as a supervisor and said, okay, let me handle this. Let me take care of this. And so, but they don't care.
No,
they don't care. So, I mean, you know, if a is the company at fault or the rep him or herself at fault for bad customer service? And I think it's both.
Both.
I mean, the company didn't train them right, and you know, the rep, you know, okay, we're both human beings, Kurt, and we have brains. You know, you can figure out when, hey, you know, this isn't quite working out. I should, you know, take a different
I'm not going to convince him
methodology on this.
Right.
But anyway, customer service is really important, and we thought that was an interesting deep dive for today. Due to the time, we're going to go ahead and skip our finances today, and we're going to go on to Kurt's favorite one, which is which is Goofy Tech. We'll talk a little bit about that for just a second.
My favorite music.
I think I actually put the Goofy Tech in here this week, which is really strange. PC Mag article that we'll share out on our Facebook page later, the 9 weirdest iPhone cases. And these are some really, really weird ones. It's in a slideshow that you can look at. And just to kind of comment on a few of them, one looks like fish on a bed of rice. The other one looks like some sort of a sea urchin. And these are all iPhone covers. Now, this one's actually kind of cool. It looks like a hard drive.
Well, not everybody would think that's cool.
Well, okay. So I'm a geek, but it makes your iPhone, the back of it, look like a hard drive.
That's pretty cool, actually.
One of them looks like a calculator, like a camera, like an old-type camera. One of them, yeah, a lobster. I don't get that one. One of them, it looks like a Bible, so you would open it up and your phone would be inside the Bible. And then one of them just looks like a rock. And then the last one I thought was pretty cool. It looks like, okay, back in the 80s when you had the car phone, you know, the bag phone.
Yes.
It looks like the receiver into the bag phone.
Yeah.
I hope there's somebody out there listening right now that used to have a bag phone in their car.
Kurt's
raising
it.
Yeah, so and I remember the first time I ever used a bag phone. It was my aunt's bag phone, and I could not understand the concept that I was going to make a phone call from a car.
It was crazy. And you know what's really interesting about those bag phones? If I remember correctly, they use up to 3 watts of power, and cell phones now are mandated to only use 0.3.
Oh yeah.
So like, if you had one of those that could get service nowadays, you get service anywhere.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you could probably be, I don't know, in the middle of nowhere and have service.
Yeah, they got really, really good service.
Of course, and, you know, cancer.
Give you brain cancer.
Yeah. But
well, that does it for Tech Talk today. We appreciate you listening in here on WCCR 94.5 LPFM. Don't forget you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/WCCR Tech Talk, and on Twitter at WCCR Tech Talk. You can also look us up on iTunes and podcast there, Tech Talk Today. And Kurt's going to sign us on, and we're looking forward to seeing you back again next week at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on WCCR 94.5 at the Crossroads.
All right. Coming up last on our Super Tuesday lineup for summer 2014, you've got the Figure 4 Fallout 7-9 with Russell Reitner, Bo Kidd, Casey Malone, Dustin Hardin, and Justin Derman. Be sure to join next week to listen to the next Super Tuesday lineup, starting with Dr. Bob's Medicine Show with Bob Dunstan. And you all take care.